Who are you gonna call? It's us. We're talking about Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire, and welcome to the Kicking the Seat live stream review of the fifth. Is Ghostbusters 5?
Yes, Ghostbusters 5. Yeah, it'd be the fifth one. Yes.
Or is it 5.5? Because I mean, as far as the Reitman universe goes, the Venkmanverse, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, this is Ghostbusters 5, but then we also have Ghostbusters 26. No, yeah, it is 5 because 2016 is in there. So is this Ghostbusters 4?
It's Ghostbusters 4 if you don't count 2016.
Right.
And we can't really, because even though that fell under the Ghost Core production company when they were trying to make this the Marvel of Ghostbusters, but it has nothing to do with continuity-wise, even though the original cast showed up in that movie playing completely different characters. It was just an odd duck of a movie. And I'm one of the few defenders on the planet of Ghostbusters 2016.
I'm the other one.
I am too. I like Ghostbusters 2016. So we got a hat trick here.
You do.
Was that a pun, Katie? Because you're wearing a very tricky hat there with the Stay Puft glasses. I appreciate that.
It's the Stay Puft sunglasses.
Well, you know, like I said earlier, reviewing makes me feel good. So
I did a rap with my friends and actually posted it online for the 2016 Ghostbusters.
It's Are they on still my your YouTube friends, Mark? Channel.
Yeah, they're still my friends. Absolutely.
Wow.
We did a rap complete with music and backbeat and everything. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I might drop a link to that in the description if it's like very nice. All right, so we're here to talk about the latest offering. Now, this was not directed by Jason Reitman, as Ghostbusters Afterlife was. This was directed by...
I can't even remember.
Gil Keenan. Yeah, I want to call him Evan Keenan for some reason. But Gil Keenan, who... I'm conflicted because on the one hand, he did Monster House, which I loved at the time. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, he committed a horrible crime for which he was never officially charged or arrested. And that would be the Poltergeist remake from nine years ago.
Do you consider that a crime for the direction or the writing? Because I feel like the writing with that was just so atrocious that
it could be like a double hitter.
I don't know.
I saw it in a theater. And you know, it was a press screening. I still wanted to leave. You know, it doesn't really matter at that point, because if he had had the dignity to fall on his celluloid sword, he would have taken his name off of it. So on some level, he believed in what he did, which is part of the crime. And I'm sorry to say Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is more Poltergeist for me than it is Monster House. I know this is going to be a very interesting conversation, I have a feeling. So I am Ian Simmons of Kicking the Seat. I'm joined by Mark the Movie Man Krawcheck, a.k.a. Mark the Movie Buster of the Spoiler Room podcast, and Katie Gladwell, the blonde in front. Welcome back. The queen of swag, I got to say. Yes. Now, Katie, I got to ask, did you get any of the fancy novelty popcorn buckets for this one?
You know what, Ian? I actually signed up to get that, and I was planning on having it for this review, but they did not inform me that it came in. So I'm very disappointed that I did not have that for this. I actually like to have those things because, one, it's just nostalgia and just a little bit of merch. But no, I did not. Long story long.
Now, question is, which one did you order? Because for this one, I was looking online and they've got like a firehouse replica. They've got a Slimer. They've got a ghost trap, which I was actually thinking of going to an AMC and buying that damn ghost trap because it's so cool.
I was trying to get the ghost trap and I signed up for the ghost trap and they never gave me any notice. And I, you know, when I went to AMC hoping I could get, when we went to the screening, I was hoping I could get it and they didn't have anything. I even wanted the little baby Stay Puffs because I think that's just marketing genius, honestly, in the film and just in general. I just think they're too cute for words.
I've got several words about the mini Stay Puff Marshmallow Men.
Less side.
We'll get into it. All right. So you apparently, Katie, enjoyed Frozen Empire, I take it.
I did.
Okay. And did you enjoy it more or less on the same level as Afterlife?
Well, with Afterlife, I know with Afterlife, I actually cried at the end of Afterlife. And then when I got to thinking about it, there was a lot of things with Afterlife that just with the nostalgia factor didn't make sense to me. It's like they purposely threw in scenarios that it's like, look, I can understand this. I can understand this with different people. But there's certain things with Afterlife that I was like, this makes no sense whatsoever. I understand why you're trying to make it like the first film. I get it. But that just really throws me off. With Frozen Empire, I actually loved the deep cut nostalgia that they had with it. Like little characters that people may not remember their name. They know who they are if they remember the first one. And even a significant character who, as soon as I saw him, I referred to him as a name that was just said once in the film. And then later in the first one, in first Ghostbusters, and then later on in Frozen Empire, you hear someone in the crowd say that word. And I'm like, this is why I love this movie, because this is like a deep cut little nostalgia thing that's what I love. I mean, you know, I'm a huge nostalgia nerd. It's like, that is my lifeblood. But sometimes they like force it so much that it's like, it just doesn't make sense. You're just doing it to do it. And this one I felt like was more subtle in it. And actually it made more sense. I also thought the exposition for a number of characters that they had that were in Afterlife, they just summed it up with one sentence. I'm like, chef's kiss. That's what you need to do. I don't need to have a full, you know, monologue of why this person's here. You guys did it in one sentence. You know what? Other films take note of that because it saves a lot of time. And then there's some others.
I understand everything that you said, and I take the precise polar opposite point of view. It's fascinating. But Mark, before we get into all of that, Mark, what did you think of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire? Where are you on this?
I'm and not doing this on purpose. I'm kind of in between. I enjoyed it enough. I was entertained. Okay. I found enough of it to be entertaining. I found enjoyable moments in it. My thing was when it remembered it was a Ghostbusters film, it actually got me more than when it was trying to do something else. No offense. I understand the family angle carried over from the first film, but then make that a bit more of the core of your story versus trying to balance that with, oh, hey, we're Ghostbusters. We've already established, not to get into spoilers right now, but we've established now we've got this thing now going on that Winston has set up that's kind of out of the blue, but at the same time you're like, okay. And then you're like, well, does this take place right after the events of first one? No, this is actually 2 years later, which then some things don't exactly jive with what they conflict with the mayor in this. Because it makes it seem like this is a revelation that they have this young kid as part of the Ghostbusters, yet they've been around for 2 years busting ghosts.
It's more like three, because I think Phoebe was almost 12 in Afterlife, yeah, and she's 15 right. In this one. Yeah,
you know, so it's one of those for me where I was like, it felt unfocused, like they weren't quite sure if they wanted to bring in this whole and expand the world of the Ghostbusters, which I'm fine with, or expand the relationship and the dynamic between this family trying to make it work and be Ghostbusters. And oh yeah, we're going to work original characters that just show up in here occasionally. We're going to toss them in here. And for me, I kind of wanted one or the other, because just as I was enjoying one, it would change a gear and suddenly you're like, oh, wait, no, we're doing this now. Okay. You know, where I wish they would have just done this or done this. You know, I mean, because that's at least what you had in the original Ghostbusters, and even two, and even in some parts of the 2016 one, is the fact of you followed a core four group and those characters, and you kind of stuck with what go here. They have so many characters and so many things they're introducing. It feels unfocused to where they forget, oh, we've got to come back to this because we haven't visited this in like the last 15 minutes. I loved the stuff with Egon's granddaughter. I loved her.
Phoebe, yeah.
Yeah, Phoebe. Mm-hmm. I wish they would have just focused on kind of that a little bit more than, oh, yeah. Oh, no, wait. Now we're going to toss in her brother's turned 18 and we're adding this storyline. But wait. No, now we're just going to toss that to the side now, where initially it seemed like that was going to kind of be a thing where he is older. And then they remember that they bring it back. I think for me, they were trying to do too much when they didn't have to after Afterlife. They had set up a lot of great things that where I thought they were going to go with this one. They do kind of, but then they throw all this other stuff in the mix. And I'm like, that could have almost been another movie. You know what I mean? You could have almost had two different movies in here instead of trying to mash this all together.
I could totally see. I totally see what you're saying,
you know,
and I agree with a lot of that too. I feel I do think it's interesting that, I mean, since Paul Rudd is the person who's the headliner for the film, but I felt like he also had the least, mm-hmm. well, between him and Carrie Coon, I feel like those two had the least character development in the movie, yet they were the two headlining factors, even though they did grow. But I also thought that, I mean, I loved Phoebe growing, but I also thought, and I mean, you guys have kids, so I don't, but she was a total bitch. Like, oh my God. There was this, that, I mean, you guys know the scene I'm talking about when mm-hmm. she said some stuff to her mom and I'm like, oh hell no, you did not say this. It's like, where's your dad? Where it's like, you need to get in check, little girl. Cause it's like, that's great. Well, you've got 160 IQ, but you do not talk to your mother like that.
In fairness, I agree with you, Katie, but in fairness, and this is one of the problems, I think, carrying over the Afterlife storyline to another movie. Let me just rewind a second. My wife, she saw the Frozen Empire trailer. She's like, I really want to see that. And I said, but you didn't see Afterlife. She's like, what's Afterlife? I said, it's the one that came before this. Yeah. So we did the homework because I was like, she remembers that there was some kind of a Ghostbusters movie that I didn't like, and that's what Afterlife was. And I had no enthusiasm for seeing this new one. And she's like, it looks fun. I said, let's watch Afterlife and we'll see if you still feel the same way and want to see Frozen Empire. We rented Afterlife, and within the first 10 minutes, we were sitting on the couch watching it, and she kind of looks at me and starts asking questions. And I'm like, yeah, those are good questions. And there will be about 75 more by the time this movie's over. And the whole thing is a mess. And by the end of it, she was able to acknowledge that she went on a ride, but it was also not a good film. And she felt sort of the same way about Frozen Empire. I think she liked this one a little bit more, but probably because of the nostalgia, the more whiz bang, bigger budget kind of effects-y, you know, roller coaster thing of it. But, you know, for me, when Phoebe talks to her mom, like, yeah, that checks out because her mom is terrible. Like, she was bad in the first movie. Like, yeah. It's the post. And Mark, you mentioned the time difference here. If this took place 8 months after the events of Afterlife, I could understand the whole, like, well, we haven't really figured out what we are, you know, labels. Right. I'm like, no, grow a spine, demand that you figure out what this situationship nonsense is. And also, you know, get your balls back, dude. I mean, she is so Carrie Coon. She's a fine actress, but her character is so just like ugly and rude to everybody throughout the film. I'm like, why didn't you just give everybody up for adoption and go live in the Himalayas or something? I mean, it's just it. And Paul Rudd, this is something else that really bothered me coming out of this movie. First of all, an hour in, I was sitting in the Pickwick Theater, beautiful, historic landmark theater in Park Ridge, the theater mm-hmm. that my wife and I got married in 20 years ago.
Wow.
Even then, an hour into Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, I thought, I don't want to watch this movie anymore. But I stayed, and it wasn't the atmosphere. None of it could do it for me. And part of the thing is, I don't like Paul Rudd anymore. You know, I don't know how that happened because he used to be one of my favorite actors, but I think the Marvel movies destroyed Paul Rudd for me because he's no longer an actor. He's just Paul Rudd TM. He's the same in every movie. He was he brought a little bit of something to the first Ant-Man. Mm-hmm. But after that, with Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, Ghostbusters Afterlife, he just shows up and he does his thing and no one demands anything of him anymore. He's not surprising or fun or fresh. He's just doing, I could have told you every line of dialogue he had in this movie if you just described, you know, it's Ghostbusters 4 and they're in New York now. I'm like, I got it. Yep. I'm pretty prepared to not laugh. They brought in Kumail Nanjiani, Patton Oswalt, all comedic people that I have enjoyed before, but it's like everybody's getting sucked into this, you know, Hollywood property nostalgia thing and just spit out like this is just Ghostbusters 4 or 5, however you want to look at it.
I like the Oswalt, the whole sequence with Patton Oswalt's character. I was hoping we would actually kind of get more of that, where you talk about the secret society. We got the spoilers up, where you talk about the secret society and, you know, all of that, and seeing him maybe become the new Rick Moranis type character to it, not like goofy, but I mean like the, he's the knowledgeable, you know what I mean? Because it just the fourth cog, if you will, or the fifth cog of it, to where he's not a Ghostbuster, but you know, I loved that sequence. That was the part where they were talking about the actual legend of what this, you know, being could be, this evil guy. And the time that felt like when you were getting into the original, where they were talking about, you know, and your girlfriend has the penthouse in Spook Central, you know, yeah, where they're talking about that type of sequence. I liked that sequence. And then we go back to family and I'm like, wait, what?
But here's the thing, Mark, with the original Ghostbusters, there are so many memorable, quotable lines from that film.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Patton Oswalt's character, can you tell me anything that he actually said that was memorable or funny, or not was it really, just no, Basil exposition? The thing that bothered me about that and the whole stunt casting of this entire film is we've got Patton Oswalt. He's known as the pop culture geek comedian. Let's put him in here somewhere without actually giving him anything substantive to do. Mike, hello. Hey. Welcome to the Ghostbusters conversation.
Yeah, sorry, I was out trying to catch ghosts myself, but yeah.
All right.
Happy to be here.
Well, I'm not going to rewind and catch up on everything that we've been talking about, but just let me get your high-level thoughts on Ghostbusters so we can know where you are at the table. We've set a place for you, but we need to know which end you're at.
Right. I always think Ghostbusters, they're kind of problematic with their sequels. The second one wasn't very good, you know, by popular opinion. I actually kind of personally think it was fine, although they basically mm-hmm. copied the first movie and put it in a second film, and it was lazy. It was still more enjoyable than what they've been producing here. Ghostbusters... Frozen Empire, it feels like an unnecessary sequel. I feel like in Ghostbusters Afterlife, they made a sequel that does pander and is extremely, you know, heavy on the nostalgia, but as something that you could actually do with the material so many years later, without having the film feel episodic, the movie worked in that nature. This film feels more episodic. This one is more, okay, another ghost is going to break out. We got to stop them. Oh, and there is one element of the film that worked, which was, I'm going to pull up her name so I don't forget it here. Melody, who was sort of like the teenage ghost mm-hmm. that, you know,
yeah.
had this sort of relationship with Phoebe. That's where the heart of the film was, because it wasn't just about, oh, we're going to capture every ghost because ghosts are bad. It was, well, are some ghosts worth capturing? Because, you know, one of them was, you know, the late, you know, Harold Ramis, Egon Spengler. Was that his name?
Egon, yeah.
Yes, Egon,
yeah.
Egon
Spengler. Okay. Yeah. I said Egon, like an idiot. But, yeah, they had that ghost and then they had this ghost where they questioned if you should really, catch ghosts, like all of them or not. But outside of that subtext, the movie feels very basic and very, oh, we've been here before. You know, they're still bringing back Slimer, which we don't need to see again for the millionth time. you know, they bring back the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man and like little versions of him that they had in previous one, but in this one that we've seen for the millionth time. And the humor is really, I don't remember much of it. The only thing I remember was Podcast, because the kid's name was Podcast. And it was such a lame joke that I was like, yeah, who would write that shit? And somehow it stuck with my head. But, you know, high-level thoughts. What if it, yeah.
I was, just to cut in, I was thinking it'd be funny, or at least different, because Podcast is such a 2016, you know, up to the last one came out in like 2021. Yeah. If he had changed his name to Livestream or something like that, just to keep up with the new technology, because he'd kind of graduated to doing sort of YouTube stuff with Ray Stantz, you know, the Dan Aykroyd character, which I think that was another subplot that's introduced kind of early on. It's not even a subplot, more of a detail. I'm like, let's watch this. I'd like to see them, you know, on their show where they're kind of evaluating allegedly psychic, items and things. That was kind of fun. But yeah. Katie, I want to go back to something that you had said earlier about the nostalgia, and I appreciate nostalgia as well, but I think with these studios turning the movies we love into properties and just kind of turning things out, and the idea that they're going to be making like Ghostbusters 25 long after we're gone. So it almost doesn't mean anything. Like, there was a time when I thought, my God, if they come out with a Star Wars movie after I'm dead, I'm going to be heartbroken because I love Star Wars. Now I'm like, I don't care. They can, they got, a billion TV shows, and I don't feel like any of them have any substance. But to get back to nostalgia done wrong, that line that you mentioned, and I'll just say it because William Atherton's Walter Peck character, the EPA asshole from Ghostbusters, really memorable all-time villain. He had a great run of like that, and Real Genius I think was 1985. I mean, oh, yeah. My God, the two great.
And Bruce Willis Christmas movie,
Die Hard, 1980.
Yes, Die Hard. Yes. Yeah.
Die Hard.
Right. And you know what? He's great because it's the same actor playing an asshole in three very different modes.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Three very distinct characters. They bring him back in this movie as the mayor, which is like, okay. But at the end, when he's standing there on the street with the Ghostbusters after they've saved the world, and someone in the crowd yells out, Dickless.
Yes.
Here's the problem with that, Katie. That's catnip for Ghostbusters fans. It does not make, it makes no sense in universe, because there were six people in that mayor's office in the first Ghostbusters when I think it was Stantz called him Dickless. Yeah. And then Bill Murray says, that's right, Your Honor, this man has no dick. No one would have known that. It's not like it was broadcast on TV. So I'm like, I'm looking at that, and I'm thinking that is just screenwriters saying, oh, we've got this reference, we'll just throw it in there. We don't have to think about have Bill Murray go up to the mayor or something and say, oh, hey, Dickless, or something like that. You know, make it make sense on a storytelling level and a nostalgia level. Mm. The Stay Puft Marshmallow Minions, they needed to be left completely out of the movie, mm-hmm. except for that post-credit stinger. Because in the end, you see, was it a guy in a truck stop or something, or a gas station? All of a sudden, his giant semi truck starts to roll away in its own. You see, it's Stay Puft Marshmallow truck stop, and then on the truck, and then you cut inside, and it's all the little. They're like gremlins at this point, driving the truck away. The one's got the cigarette lighter burning through his skull. If you had not seen the Stay Puft Minions anywhere else in the film at all, and they just showed up at the end, then it'd have been like, oh, it's a nice surprise. It's a callback to the previous movie, but they're all over this film. And it's like, just way too much. It's just stuff that worked before, stuff that kind of worked last time. We're just going to throw it in here without really giving us anything more. I think the Phoebe Melody relationship was pretty special, but they kept coming back to it in the midst of all these other subplots. I'm like, I can't hold on to anything, which is one of the reasons that an hour in, again, I said, I just want to go home.
Yeah,
I'm not going to forgive them for that, because they teased me with a potential Maximum Overdrive reference, and instead it was Stay Puffs. I thought for sure a ghost was going to possess the truck, and I'm like, yes, a ghost possesses the Stay Puff truck. I am there. And then they show the minions on the inside. I'm like, aww.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, Katie, you were going to say something.
Sorry, Katie.
I was going to say one of the things about Afterlife that I felt like was so much like The Force Awakens is basically Afterlife seemed like they just took so many materials from Ghostbusters and just put it in 2021. And the same thing with Force Awakens. They just did everything from the first Star Wars and just basically it's Force Awakens, at least with this one. And I agree. Yeah. Dicklus is completely out of, like, no one would know what that was. But yet, as soon as I saw William Atherton, that's immediately, I'm like, oh my God, Dicklus is here. And I wrote it even down in my notes. And then later on, I mean, seriously, I did. I can show you. It's like, it's Dicklus. And then at the end, when you hear that in the crowd, I'm like, yes, it makes no sense, but yes, because it's like, oh, that just touches my heart. Because it's like, someone else like knew that too. It's like someone was in the crowd. Someone was in the theater, in the crowd yelling it. But I, one of the things I loved about it was the library administrator who was who was in the first one, who is John Rothman, who's a character actor. He's in so many films. And to see him in that and also going back to the library, which, no offense, any films that bring back libraries, I like, even if they're a little bit like, I want more kids to read. I want more kids to be involved in books and all that stuff, especially what's going on. I'd rather have that than so many people smoking, which I feel like is coming back in films. And I do not understand why. Like, I don't know if you guys have noticed it, but I've been like, why in the hell is everyone keep smoking in all these movies now? But seeing him in it again, it's, you know, yeah, it's a nostalgia narcotic. I loved it. It's like some people, they won't know his name. They won't, they may be like, why do I know that guy? Was he in one? And it's like, then it makes them go back to see, you know, Ghostbusters and all that stuff. But I had somewhat of an issue with the Phoebe Melody plotline just because, I don't know, I just had major issues with Phoebe just being a total C-bag. I just like thought that she was so, like, I get it. You're a teenage girl. I can relate. I have been there. I also understand that you're in New York, but you also, like, weren't in Oklahoma that long. So I know it doesn't seem like you're making friends that easily. I think that maybe has something to do with your personality, less with you, less than, oh, everybody's mean kind of thing. But the whole thing, like, if it's friendship, if it's romantic, but also, did Melody kill her family? Like, I kind of got the fact that it seemed like Melody burned down her family and killed them accidentally, and then she couldn't move on. And then when the whole thing happened, you know, we are talking spoilers, but when the inevitable stuff happened at the end, I don't think that was a big surprise, but to me, it was just kind of like a weird, like, okay, Phoebe's being an asshole. This Melody girl's kind of in the same boat. So I guess that's why they're getting along and it's cool and stuff. But I don't know. It just seemed like really far-fetched to me. Also, I'll give a compliment. I like the production design. I like the new things they did with the different enclosures and the different ghosts that are kind of coming through and stuff like that. I thought that was a cool touch. I actually do think I like this one better than Afterlife just because it's a little bit more originality and not so much like all Ghostbusters. It's like the reason why I was so enamored when I saw Afterlife is because it's like, oh my gosh, this is just like Ghostbusters. And then I realized, like, yeah, it is just like those. Like, wow, they really didn't really stretch that. And I especially got annoyed with the Carrie Coon being dressed in the same dress, kind of like as Sigourney Weaver, in which I'm like, this makes no sense whatsoever. So at least with this, I thought there was more originality. Although, yeah, she does suck as a parent. She really is awful.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah, the Phoebe thing, I mean, I think that was my favorite of these myriad subplots, but it's still not that good. I think if you really want to explore something with this character, I don't know how you tie this into like the world ending demon or something, unless you make like an oddly personal Ghostbusters style story or an episode of something. But you're right. Melody, she reminded me a lot of Carrie Coon, that kind of like disaffected, everything sucks, I'm so over everything, you know, I'm just a ghost and like, you're not afraid of me. Wow. Weird. But the idea that her family died in this, you know, fire that killed her, and she wants to cross over so she can get back to him. There's no sincerity in it. I mean, yeah. I guess I shouldn't have been surprised. Like at the end, I'm not even sure if that was just a ruse, a cover story that she was told to put to Phoebe to make her more sympathetic or whatever. But nothing about this strikes me as someone who'd lost their family or was sad or confused about the afterlife. If they had woven that into her being a really tragic figure, maybe even torn because she's been promised by this demon, like, you do this thing for me and I'll reunite you with your family. And maybe in the course of those conversations, she helps Phoebe realize that even though her family kind of sucks, they still are family. And how would you feel if they all died in a fire? That would have been something, you know, a bit of growth instead of, oh, Phoebe's just, you know, embarrassed. And that's her big character switch. There's just so much about this movie that strikes me as not being a real movie. Whereas I look at the first Ghostbusters and it really is a movie for adults. These new films are movies that are trying to get adults into the theater, but they're catering to kids who aren't showing up in the theaters unless they're dragged by adults. I mean, there's research out now saying that, you know, Gen Z, who movie studios want their money, which they don't have because they're all fucking broke, but they don't care about these legacy franchise sequels. These are movies that the originals in some cases came out two generations before they were born. They have no connection to this stuff. What does someone in 2024 care about something that came out 40 years ago? They can't. And trying to make it relatable and thus taking the DNA, the Ghostbusters DNA out of it, which was, it's four guys, one of whom is a con man. They're all college, you know, people who stayed at college way too long. They get kicked out and they got to make money. So they start busting ghosts. And it turns out, oh, they also saved the world. Where is any of that DNA in this movie, except that they bring back the original actors, only one of whom, Ernie Hudson, actually turns in a performance or something resembling a performance, some personality. Bill Murray, I think he was drunk or tired, and Dan Aykroyd delivers everything in that monotone. You go back and watch Ray Stantz in the original, he's a pinball, he's all over the place with this enthusiasm. The only time you see it here really is when he's interacting with podcast. It's like, what's going on here, guys?
Yeah, I mean, it felt like you just had these random teenagers that you don't like know much about, and then you, because they have it, have to have it be for the kids. That's what they're really marketing towards. They're not marketing towards anyone else, because as you said, The Ghostbusters were just these schlubby guys who just want to make a quick buck, and they were brilliant with science, so they used that to create their own company. The later films are trying to cater to nostalgia, and that's basically like all they have. Like the newest film, I'm glad they at least had a villain of the week instead of just, you know, bringing back Zool or Gozer. They actually focus on, oh, let's have someone new here that they can fight. The only problem was, it doesn't feel very consequential to anyone, and there are no real stakes. If they actually introduced some stakes, it would be fun and interesting. But the movie's just flat and boring, and here's just more stuff that you can see again. Here's Slimer. Here's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. You know, it didn't leave any lasting impact on me. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I didn't mean to cut you off there. I just am going to say, I think had they focused on one of these elements that we mentioned, I think you've got a better movie, and there's potential to make a full, not a 2-hour movie, but a 90-100 minute movie in here. Focus on either, okay, you may have Raymond or Winston show up as a cameo, but let's focus on the new family who we established and spent some time with in Afterlife as being the new Ghostbusters and seeing how they're trying to figure this stuff out and how they've done some new stuff and how they're not. And they also have a family dynamic because they're dealing with two teenagers, one turning 18 and one coming of age of sorts, if you will. She should have been written a lot better, but you know, she's getting older and discovering who she is more. And you've got the 18-year-old and you got that family dynamic. You could have focused just on them balancing, trying to figure themselves out and being Ghostbusters. And you've got a movie right there, or you've got them not wanting to deal with ghostbusting at all. And you want to play the nostalgia factor, bring back your original Ghostbusters, but they're so old now, they're trying to relive their youth and they can't. Mm-hmm. And now they've got this big threat coming into New York that they don't know quite how to deal with, you know, because of their age. You could have done that angle. You could have done the one thing. You had only four Ghostbusters you had to worry about in the first two films, and the threat felt bigger. When the containment unit went off in the original, we spent time with the consequence of that containment unit breaking. I mean, we got that wonderful music montage, and I love the soundtrack to the original. I listened to it constantly, both the vocal soundtrack and the instrumental, which I got on the vinyl. But you get that wonderful, you spend a good couple of minutes just how the ghosts are wreaking havoc across the city. And even that is still linked towards your original baddie. That's the thing. There is no streamlined baddie. Even your baddie that shows up here, like shows up in the last 10 minutes and gets unmasked by the Scooby-Doo gang, basically. You know what I mean? I mean, they tried to do too much. And I think this fell into the same thing that a couple other IP legacy films seem to have. It's almost as if they were too afraid to do a limited series, so they tried to do a movie, because you've got introduction of the ghost force in here where they're studying ghosts that Ernie, you know, Hudson Winston shows them, which is beautiful. You could literally do a movie on how they're starting. You know, you've got the Phoebe character discovering who she is, feeling confused a bit of how she feels towards this female ghost. And you could have pulled a whole Lydia Dietz with her on how she wants to be a ghost angle. And you could have explored that whole thing and her whole family dealing with the fact that maybe Phoebe's suicidal. It's darker, but you could have done that angle.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was that one interesting scene where she actually goes into this containment unit or this field that basically turns her into a ghost for a few minutes so she can experience what Melody, you know, experiences and kind of be with her. That was kind of touching, but ultimately it was just a trick for the big, you know, rug pulling reveal. I mean, you think about Frozen Empire, if this was really a great movie about family dynamics, you could have something thematically going on with parents trying to, like, you know, the kids are growing up and all they want to do is freeze them in time because they don't want to let them go, something like that. But yeah, it's just the whole thing is a mess. And I still haven't forgiven them for what they did with the character of Egon Spengler. And that was when I mentioned my wife and I watching Afterlife in the first 10 minutes. She's like, wait a second, when did Egon Spengler become the kind of guy who would completely abandon his family, leave his daughter to be raised by someone we don't know?
Yeah.
And in this movie, they make it worse because Winston has this institution that is studying the supernatural and everything, which looks like he's been running for years. But we're led to believe that Egon ran away, disconnected himself from all the other Ghostbusters to fight this threat on his own because his compatriots wouldn't believe him. He had video technology. He could have recorded what was going on down in those mines down in Nebraska or whatever and sent, you know, hey, I'm not a crackpot. Look at what's going on. I had to set up proton packs to keep an evil well from swallowing up the earth. He could have sent that to Winston. They could have gotten some institute planes down there or something. The thing is, like, yes, Katie, to your point, I'm glad that you appreciated this from a nostalgia point of view, but I feel like that's all this movie really has going for it. It's got some cool nuggets in there, but as a film, you're talking about this as film. Like, you talk about Ghostbusters as an event, an important movie that was a comedy, but it also had these great horror elements to it. Mark, you mentioned the ghost breaking out of the containment unit. Some of that was like downright eerie with these like little light balls flying over everywhere. Mm-hmm. And at the end, when they all realize that the only way to defeat Gozer is to cross the streams and how that's bad, when they, you know, it kicks off with kind of a funny line where Venkman's like, I love this idea. I'm glad we thought of it. I'm proud to be a part of it. But they go up, they step up onto those steps and they light up the proton packs. And Venkman says, see you on the other side, Ray. There's a moment where you can see them like getting down to business, where we as the audience don't know how this weird comedy is going to end. They might fucking blow themselves up to save the world without any thought of being a sequel. There's none of that in this. It's just, you know, goofy stuff.
Here's the thing with that. I mean, you've got Reitman, Aykroyd, and Murray, who were friends for decades, who also wrote the film or had input on writing the film. I feel like that is a once in a lifetime like moment in a bottle that, I mean, yes, we got to experience that. We got to see that. And one of the things with this is that I don't think it's going to happen again, because with this, like when you were talking about the writing and you actually talked about the quotes, I still quote Ghostbusters. I still quote, I mean, almost on a daily daily basis. Like, Mother Puss Bucket is one of my favorite things to quote. Seriously. It's like, dogs and cats living
together. That's hysteria.
Nope, nobody steps on a church in my town.
But that's the thing. I don't know if Aykroyd would consider doing some writing with this, or if he's just done. He just wants to like get his paycheck, you know, he's got Ray and all that stuff. But I feel like for it to actually get that point, because I don't feel like Ghostbusters will ever be the quotable zeitgeist that it was. It's just, did I understand any of that stuff when I was like in my single, barely, maybe double digits? No, not at all. And I think that's one of the things that made it so amazing, that it's like, so this is like a kid's movie, but it's actually an adult movie, but I get to watch it, because maybe that's why it's one of those things too, that it's like why everyone loves it. But yeah, until they get, I mean, I thought this was great. I had fun with it. I like the story. I think they could go on. I honestly feel like the family dynamic really needs to, I mean, like we've said, not too much, but yeah, Carrie Coon just sucks as mom. This was really not great. Paul Rudd, like, let's get it together. I mean, you guys made great points. It's been 3 years. Like, what the hell is going on? Like, seriously, right. We don't know how to define ourselves right now, guys. But they just need to have those, like, you know, quotable moments in these films, and actually in any films. It's like, you know, it's really, you don't really have movies like the 80s that it just, like, where you just quote them, like, even to this day, 40 years later. And I feel like that's one of the things about film these days that, I mean, as much as we talk about the nostalgia and how they're good or not and all that stuff, until they get the writing down, I mean, it's just going to be, it's going to be what it is. I had fun. Am I going to quote any of it? No. Do I barely remember some of the characters? Yeah, I just saw it last week, and yet I still like it. I feel like people should see it, but you make a damn good point that it's like, new generations, they're going to probably be forced to go with their parents or something like that to really get this. Because if you've got Paul Rudd leading, then he needs to like really take the reins and lead, or just make McKenna Grace and Finn Wolfhard like top billing. Like, honestly, it's like, that's, if they're the ones like leading the movie, then let them lead. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, because the most Finn does is go after Slimer this whole movie. That's it.
Yeah.
And complain about not being able to drive. That's all his character was. Yet they open it with him complaining about how he's 18 and not being allowed to do things. And this is what I was saying before. They could have focused on the two kids this whole movie, of how they're trying to come into their own. Paul Rudd and, you know, the mom trying to figure things out as being Ghostbusters. That's all you needed.
I think, you know, they cut to New York at the end of Afterlife, so you kind of know where it's going. But if they hadn't done that, and they just, or retcon this one, just have Phoebe and Trevor go on a school trip to New York and they end up having to fight ghosts or something, like kind of like the Spider-Man studying abroad, Far From Home. Yeah. Anyway, we're not going to wrap up right now, but I do have to wrap Mark because he's got a big deal interview to do in a few minutes. So I'm going to let him get to that. So thanks, Mark, for hanging out. No, I totally get it. Go have fun. Good luck. And I can't wait to see it. We'll have more on that later.
Great discussing this with all of you. Always a pleasure, Katie. Always a pleasure, Mike. And Ian, thank you as well. We'll talk to you later.
Bye, all right, Mike.
Man, take care.
Bye.
All right. Now, before we go on, as we do have a super chat from Petty. Hello, sir.
Hello, Petty. Everyone.
Yes. Hello, everyone. It seems that with this film, the studio lost the direction it has achieved in the previous one. Who is this film directed for? To the oldies of the Generation X or for small children? Well, we kind of, without knowing it, Petty, I think we kind of answered your question just now. It's, you know, it's unfocused as far as who it's actually made for. I think there was a bunch of ideas about who would show up to watch this movie. I mean, I think it was number one this weekend. We'll see how it does, you know, if it has any kind of staying power. But it was a bigger budgeted film than the last movie. So I figured they probably figured, hey, it was a hit. It was kind of a pandemic era hit. So this one's going to be even bigger. It might be a miscalculation. I don't know if we're getting a third, but or a fifth. I told my wife, though, six? I said, if yeah. is it six? I told my wife, yeah. if I said, if they make a third movie in this mini series, I will not watch it. Now, I'm drawing a lot of those hard lines lately because as I get older, I realize just how much, as I think someone once said, there's more road behind than there is ahead. I have to be more judicious with what I invest my time and psychic energy into. And this Ghostbusters franchise just isn't it. I'll just wait for them to, they're remaking everything now. So yeah. I don't know, except Back to the Future. Back to the Future is still sacred because Bob Gale and Robert Zemeckis refuse to let anybody touch that. And I love them for it. But yeah. So yeah, Petty, I don't know if any of that answered your question, but yikes.
Who knows who they made it for? I feel like they made it for, I'm going to take a little offense to the oldies of Generation X there, Petty. I mean, oldies.
Yeah.
You can just say Generation X.
When I saw Ghostbusters, I was a little kid, so I always liked it for the toys. And then there's like literally a scene in the movie where they have like a toy commercial for Ghostbusters, and that's where it feels like it's for kids. Anyways, Katie, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I think they made it for Generation X, because I feel like that's what really made Ghostbusters Afterlife. I think that what really sold it, because we just see, you know, all these memories, like all the things I said before, all the quotes, everything, you just rush back. But these movies aren't going to have that. And until we get some writing like that, and again, these are all like National Lampoon writers, all that stuff. Until we have those people that are doing that, you're not going to have that. Like, I'd love to see Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, you know, do some line, because I feel like they could do some stuff that would be really, really quotable. Just people who, like, you know, have come up together. They have that natural chemistry with each other for writing and can just get those quotes out. Because I think that's the thing that's missing. You have Aykroyd, Ramis and Murray that were friends, and then Reitman. And that's just not one of the factors now.
Yeah.
Right. And I think, first of all, I want to, Petty is stepping in to say, thanks. I'm an oldie of the Generation X.
I am too. So, yeah. I am too, Petty.
and me too. You know, Mike, you're a bit younger than both of us. But I got to say, I wear that Gen X as a badge of honor because, and this is going to sound kind of haughty, but, you know, so be it. I feel like we are the last generation that had culture to mine. I mean, if you look at the 90s, the 2000s, the aughts now, and we're moving into the 2020s, or we're already well on our way, everything seems to be IP related and IP, intellectual property, familiar stuff that we can take and recycle and spit out a quote unquote new version. What when the Gen Z or Gen Alpha folks, when they are our age, what are they going to be looking at? They're still probably going to be looking at stuff that, you know, like I made the joke about, you know, Ghostbusters 17. That's not a far-fetched idea. There's going to be Star Wars 82. I heard something about a remake of Breaking Bad. Now, I don't know if that's true, but it's entirely possible because it's popular. It's an IP. I hope it's not true. But yeah, it just gets down to the point of like they're going to have to scrape the bottom of the barrel for familiarity. And the era of these $250 million special effects movies, I think, is going to dry up because we're all going to be gone someday. And our kids, unless it's like, I think I was watching Film Threat or something, and they were talking about, you know, maybe the future is movies like Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, but broken up into like 120 TikTok videos where you watch the movie 1 minute at a time.
Oh my God. You see, this movie would work better as a cartoon. I think a lot of this stuff could work better as not a cartoon movie, but just as a regular cartoon episode. Because I felt like that was how this movie was market was consequential enough. Like, what does this have to do with anyone? Like, how is this going to affect anybody? We already know that there's no stakes. We know they're going to catch the ghosts. We know everything's going to be fine. And the only interesting part was when they were developing Phoebe and Melody's relationship. But this is really just feeling like another Ghostbusters film that's feeding nostalgia, but also trying to appease the kids. So they're trying to get the kids and the adults. And the crowd I saw the movie with, it was like all these grown men dressed up as Ghostbusters. And
Same.
And they were clapping at all the scenes and cheering it on. And it's like, this movie's meant for the hardcore fans. And well, not the hardcore fans, but the people who just like anything. You could show like a Ghostbusters taking a dump at a press screen at a publicity screening, and everybody would start applauding it. You know,
I mean, maybe maybe it was Slimer doing that. I don't know if it's just like a Ghostbuster taking a dump and it's like, yay. Yeah.
No, just publicity screenings. It's a problem because everybody, you know, is basically there to clap on for the right moments and everything else. They're kind of being manipulated by having it come out early and not saying anything yet.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't want to crap on anybody's joy. We're talking about a lot of feces here tonight, but you know, people can enjoy it. There's obviously an audience for it, but my uncomfortability is talking about it in the context of it being associated in any way with Ghostbusters. You know, it's a truly great film. I rewatched it a few years ago, and some of the stuff kind of like bothered me as an adult. Like, I picked up on things like Peter Venkman really was a creep in that movie.
Oh, big
like
time.
he wasn't just the lovable asshole. He was like the proto Me Too candidate. But you know, it's Bill Murray. So I don't know what to do with these movies except to just like stop watching them. But all right, so Petty comes in again. I bet you that all of them. I am the oldest. Maybe I don't know. I'm not going to ask your age, Petty, because I value you. Unless you want to spontaneously share it, and then we can see. If you say, oh, I'm 42 years old, I'd be like, no, get out of here. Yeah. But
it appeals
don't get out
to
here,
a broad audience, but too much of a broad audience. It's for kids and adults, but you know, it's also extremely shallow and you know predictable. What were you going to say? Sorry.
When you said broad audience, I immediately put it together in my head as a broadience, but that could have like a weird other connotation to it. I don't want to get into that. John Griffin. I believe this is my former coworker and friend, not former friend. We didn't have a falling out or anything, but break up an hour narrative into 10-minute sections with ads between. What a novel idea. Hey, I was suggesting 1 minute chunks, sir, but that would be unwieldy and ungodly, I dare say. Yeah.
Oh, one thing I know, Ian, you were saying that so far they're not remaking Back to the Future. And I
don't
feel
make,
like
don't make me off myself on
oh,
a live
no, no, no.
Katie.
No, no, no. I feel like they definitely are not going to remake Back to the Future, because I feel like after 2020, I feel like someone maybe did, and it was obvious that Marty slept with his mom. So I feel like maybe that's why they're not going to do it, because I think in some alternate universe, it's like, you know what? Whoops. Yeah, we shouldn't have done that. We should just left it Michael J. Fox. Now look what happened.
Look, if my mom was Leah Thompson circa 1985, there'd be some, you know, devil on the one shoulder, angel on the other. No, okay, John Griffin says, I stand corrected. Thank you, sir. look, here's something that I think could have, and I know we're getting into the realm that a lot of people hate, but I love it. The idea of like, oh, you're just writing a different movie than the one you're reviewing. Yes, because as I'm sitting there in a theater being utterly bored, I have to keep myself entertained somehow. What if this movie ended on a cliffhanger? What if they had developed the relationship between Phoebe and Melody? Phoebe decides she crosses over and is a ghost, and she stays a ghost. And it's at the very end where the betrayal happens, and she realizes, oh, I've been duped, and now I'm being sucked into this containment unit or beamed over to the afterlife, separated from my family. And the next movie is they have to go get her, because one of the things we've never explored in these movies is what is on the other side. Is it a heaven? Is it a hell? The only thing we've gotten is like they all go to a containment unit. Oh, that's another thing that pissed me off about this movie. I thought we were done with Skybeam as a blockbuster trope, but we got Skybeam again. Now, for those who may not know what I'm talking about, because I had to explain it to my wife, because she has thankfully missed out on a lot of the blockbuster movies from the last, you know, decade. Skybeam is where at the end of a big budget Hollywood movie, there's some kind of a threat coming from above or below, and a giant beam of energy shoots into the sky or down from the sky, and usually things fly from some portal to another. It's an embarrassing trope that I thought we were way past, but no, we get Skybeam for a couple of seconds. She said, but it was only in the movie for like a minute. I was like, it's still Skybeam. Yeah. It was unforgivable.
It's just so much of the same material that has no originality to it. And, you know, the only originality they put in is this relationship between the two teenagers, which isn't even that great. Like you guys were saying, Melody's kind of an annoying, bad, selfish person who isn't very fun to follow. And when you have that, there's no real chemistry, because you got Paul Rudd just doing his Paul Rudd thing and being charming and ageless and amazing, you know. But that's you have Carrie Coon, who is being there's like a scene where Finn Wolfhard is asking her son, is like asking her how to do something, and she's like, well, you're a grown man, you can do it yourself. And it was,
she's sitting literally scrolling on her phone.
Yeah,
not
while
at
she's
her son.
Talking on her phone. Yeah. And it's like, it's moments like that where I'm going, okay, why do I want to follow these characters for 2 hours? And the whole reason is to give a nostalgia boner to the lowest common denominator of an audience.
Well, I hate to say it, but it would be interesting to see what would happen if Carrie Coon's character went on vacation and she wasn't in the next one, because I honestly don't feel like she brings anything to the series. And I hate that, because I think she's an amazing actress, and I don't want, I mean, I feel like there's few actresses in this series anyway, but honestly, I mean, what you guys are saying, like the way she was with Finn, and it's like, well, you're 18, figure it out. You're this. It's like, hey, don't talk to me like that. It's like, well, this, and I'm like, oh my God, seriously, woman, like you are a grown ass woman who has two kids. You need to get your shit together. Like, honestly, you are embarrassing me. And
well, right. But I mean, like, kind of to your point, Katie, I can't remember what he was asking. I think it was like he couldn't find something or he had to do something, but it was something kind of simple that I'm thinking, oh, you just go do whatever it is. But he didn't know how to do it. And she said, well, you can figure it out. To me, I'm like, okay, as a parent, why doesn't he know how to do that? What I'm assuming or misremembering maybe as a simple household thing. That kind of speaks to, well, I didn't really raise you or care about you. You're kind of a latchkey kid, and that sucks. How does she feel about that? Does she acknowledge it? Which gets back to my problem with this entire new version of the franchise. Egon Spengler being the absentee parent. I still don't know who the hell raised Carrie Coon's character. They never mention the home life, except that Egon checked in and had all these Polaroids of what she was doing throughout her life. And it seemed like she was doing a lot of things and didn't seem miserable. So it's just all incongruous. And it's this undercurrent. It's kind of like the pink slime rising in anger below New York City in Ghostbusters 2. It's just like this taints the entire street level viewing experience for me.
No, you're exactly, because I mean, I feel like there's going to be an absentee father. It would have been Venkman, because he seems to be, I don't know, it's especially like in 2 when Dana Barrett is saying, it's like, what's when you're referring me to the old ball and chain, that it's like, that's when I decided to, you know, step away and all that stuff. And I don't know. It's, yeah, it is really odd that Egon would be the one that they would have, like, have a family, and then he just abandons them.
You just put something in my head, Katie. There's one character from this franchise, and notably, they skip over Ghostbusters 2 even in Afterlife. Mm-hmm. There's that scene where they go down into the mine, and they've got those carvings of the dates of the different apocalypses, you know, above the temple, and it's like, you know, 14 something and 17 something, and then 1984, and then 2016, completely overlooking 1989 with the whole slime and Vigo and all this other stuff. But in that movie, it's established that Dana Barrett has a child, Oscar.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it have been cool? It's the one character that's not mentioned. I mean, they even brought Dana Barrett back for Afterlife. What if in this movie, Oscar is a Ghostbuster? Maybe he's the guy that's working for Winston, that blonde-haired guy with the glasses or something. Mm. Turn him into a character, have like a kind of a rocky relationship with his dad. To your point, it should have been Venkman who abandoned the family, and maybe abandoned Oscar and turned him in. What if someone were to be a Ghostbuster and use that knowledge to bring forth the apocalypse? You know, the rogue agent or something like that. You know, again, I'm spinning off into speculation, but none of the stuff that they're presenting to me as an adult who loved Ghostbusters, like you, Katie, before I was old enough to understand it. But that's because the original filmmakers made something that could appeal to people of all ages, but they wrote it to a level of, we're aiming at adults. If the kids get it, awesome. If they don't, well, hey, they got to see a green ghost and a giant marshmallow guy. But yeah, I just don't feel like the people making this care about people want to think and enjoy entertainment.
Was Dana Barrett in Afterlife?
Yes. In a I believe it was a post-credit scene, they reenacted the whole, like, I'm holding up a card. What do you, you know, because she was doing with Peter.
Right.
When she shocked him. Yeah.
That's right. Thank you. God. Wow. That totally forgot that one.
Because I think they even did that. They introduce it because they're going through the initial credits, and they have each actor has a title card, and then it says Sigourney Weaver. And just as you're thinking, wait, where was she in the movie? That's when they cut to the mid credits of her showing up. That was the most clever thing I think they did in that movie.
Ghostbusters 2016, you mean?
No, Afterlife.
They showed her in Afterlife. I never knew that. Oh my god.
You have to not turn off the movie in disgust as the credits roll, Mike.
That's
you stick
probably
around.
The problem I had with it. Yeah, because I was always wondering where, because he married her in the second movie and they had a kid. I was always wondering, where are those guys in the movie?
Like, well, he didn't marry her in the second movie.
Okay, so they were just living together.
No.
They got together at the end. Baby Oscar was not Peter's kid because they broke up between Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2. She had a kid with someone else and that didn't work out. And then baby Oscar was the vehicle that was going to bring forth, you know,
you see,
Vigo, the Scourge.
That's how many years I've seen it that I don't remember it that much.
A lot of people are going to feel the same way about this movie.
Exactly.
Sorry.
But that's the thing. It's something you'll see on FX that they'll just be running continuously and you'll be like, oh yeah, that movie. And then you'll flip the channel past it.
Right. Well, we're going to wrap it up, I think, here, but we got a couple more comments. One, again, from John. If the main takeaway of a film is you can easily think of three alternate better plots, it probably failed. John, I think we've outlined about 7 alternate plots here, so I think it doubly failed 2x5. And also, Petty, for another $2,000 Argentinian dollars, really appreciate it, man. Thank you very much. As a foreigner who experienced the 80s movies created in your country as a child, it bothers me to see these reinventions. For you, I imagine that loving cinema and that the movies of the 80s gave you a national identity, I imagine that it must bother you much more. Am I right? I don't know about the national identity. I guess kind of. I mean, because there was, you know, the 80s was very much a rah-rah kind of, you know, pro-America, like Reagan era thing. It was very much of the zeitgeist. So in that case, I can definitely see that. And there's probably a book in there somewhere. But in terms of my own identity of being like a pop culture kid of the 80s, okay, here's a follow-up. Maybe give you some more context what he's talking about. Pride in the films that were created at that time. Yes.
Yes.
Because these were the films that we, I think collectively, Mike, you're a little bit younger than us, so it might apply to you tangentially. You mentioned you watched the Ghostbusters cartoon, right? Or you play with the toys.
Yeah, that was basically it. Like, I didn't know like anything regarding the story until I got older and watched it straight through, you know?
Right. But yeah, it is. It's the pop cultural air that we breathe. We come up loving these characters, quoting the movies, in a lot of cases, learning life lessons from them. Whereas I watch these movies now, I'm like, what do you actually learn in Ghostbusters, Afterlife, or Frozen Empire? I don't know, because I don't think that the filmmakers demonstrate any kind of an urge to have a morality tale or right versus wrong or whatever. It's just all messed up people doing messed up things and using this kind of a skin suit of nostalgia to tell what barely holds together as a story.
Well, and I feel like in Ghostbusters, the core value of it was friendship and everyone coming and like these guys being friends. And even at the end, it's like, you know, we're going to take this on together. And then in two, it was like kindness. And it's like, look, New York is crazy, but we have to be nice to each other because it's going to destroy the world if we're not. And then in Afterlife, it's just like, it's just going back to one and redoing everything that one did, but not with the friendship. But then you have the friendship again because they all come together. And then you have Harold Ramis in that CGI, you know, little bit. And that to me got me teary because I know he had passed away. And like that, I mean, I loved Harold Ramis. I thought he was amazing. But then this one, I don't see that there's really any sort of like, what's the takeaway from this? It's like, yeah, I don't see that there's a takeaway from this because I mean, at least in Afterlife, like I said, you go back to like, you know, it's the core thing about being friends and we can do this as long as we're friends together and we stick to each other. And, you know, we have that trust in each other that we can work this out. In this one, I mean, and I'm the one who's praising the movie, but in this one, yeah, you definitely don't have that. You have the, maybe a girl who burned her family. Oh my gosh, it's so crazy. My thing's like lighting up.
Oh no.
And I'm not even pushing it. Oh.
You didn't like what you said.
What does that mean? That's really freaking me out, guys. But yeah, in this one, you have a girl who maybe burned down her family and is trying to get to the other side. I don't know. You have a kid who's trying, who's like, who's not quite a boy, not quite a man, you know, figuring his way out. You have a mom and a single mom and a woman who just is, yeah, it seems like there's a bunch of people who just don't know what the hell they're doing. And then at the end, they still kind of don't know what the hell they're doing. And then you have Paul Rudd who ends up, you know, quoting, you know, the Ghostbusters lines, you know, I ain't afraid of no ghosts. And I love that, even though I knew it was coming and it was dumb, but it was like, look, if this is what you're going to do to get the, you know, do that marquee name, Paul Rudd, fine. I love you for it. I wish you would have done a little bit more, but that was really cute.
At least he didn't quote them while eating a tub of Baskin Robbins. But no, Katie, again, this is idea number 9, but it relates back to something I was saying earlier. Imagine if the end, Phoebe decides to cross over with Melody and she's like, oh, now that you're a ghost, I can finally introduce you to my family. and they go through this portal to the afterlife, and her family is like this burned, charred husk that she actually did kill them on purpose. And then Phoebe realizes she's made a horrible mistake because she's played right into the hands of a demon. And that's your fucking cliffhanger. That's what the Ghostbusters have to save Phoebe from her, you know, herself. And then you come back in the next movie and realize the power of family. Yes.
That would have been awesome. Phoebe falls for a serial killer because she's an asshole.
Or they could do something really terrible and have her go to the afterlife and meet Harold Ramis, and then we have a CGI version of him again, and they have a discussion of why she needs to go back and why she's important to people. Exactly. We don't want that, but that's something where I wouldn't be surprised if they ever produced that, if they made a third film, because they really are like, oh, what do people remember? Let's do that. Oh, we got to go for the heartstrings. We got to reference Harold Ramis, which, hey, the first one, I kind of liked that because he's clearly missing. But as you guys said, I didn't like how he abandoned his family to have some ranch to study ghosts, you know. But
because it's a splinter, though, isn't it, Mike? Because even though you can, in your own headcanon, you can say these are not real Ghostbusters movie. When you go back to watch the original Ghostbusters, and maybe you have since you saw Afterlife, I don't know. But I know when I go back to watch Ghostbusters again, whenever that happens, I'm going to be looking at Egon Spengler thinking, yeah, this is the dirtbag who abandons his family. Oh, he's so cute with the Twinkie and everything. But no, he's secretly, you know, he's sleeping with someone, and then she gets pregnant. He abandons them and, you know, has this daughter growing up to be like in her 40s, and she never knew her dad, and resentment and all this stuff. Like, it throws this dark cloud over this great comedy. Okay, I swear to God, we're gonna get out of here because it's, you know, we're over time. I really appreciate y'all hanging out, but we got a few more to close out. Finer point on it, I didn't leave the original Ghostbusters discussing how it could have been better. Yes, that's exactly the point. Ghostbusters, Peter Venkman aside, is a pretty perfect movie, just plot wise. I've never seen a critical takedown of that movie or like, oh, but you know, the Marshmallow Man didn't make sense because of this, this, and this. No, it all works. Patty says Ghostbusters 2 was not as good as the first, but it could have been with the family, could be seen with the family, and in the end, it appealed to the feeling of unity and brotherhood among city residents, good values. That's another point, Katie, to what you were saying. Mm-hmm. I got goosebumps when you were talking about the idea of people being kinder to each other, because that movie's 35 years old this summer. Yeah. And I feel like, as they say, now more than ever, we could use that message of like, let's just try and be nice and come together and work it all out. I would cheer if the Statue of Liberty came walking down the street, Fifth Avenue, or whatever, to Your Love Lifts Me Higher, as cheesy as it is. I always love that scene. Eddie says, all that seems to be lost. Yes.
Yeah.
The American way. Ha, ha, ha. Yes, exactly. And that's the best way to end, I think, tonight's show. So thank you very much, everybody. I have been Ian Simmons. I still am. Love kicking the seat. Katie Glidewell, the blonde in front. Thank you. Mike Crowley of You'll Probably Agree, a.k.a. YPA Reviews. Gang, thanks for hanging out. Everybody out there, thank you for hanging out and watching either live. We had quite a few folks tonight. Or if you're watching on the replay and you like this show, please like, subscribe, click the bell for notifications. Definitely follow all of Earth's Mightiest Critics. Their information will be down below. Also, Mark the Movie Man Krawchak, who had to jump out to do a really cool interview, which you'll find out more about that later, I'm sure. And until next time, next week, I'm doing some counter programming because I'm not going to watch Godzilla X Kong. I might watch Godzilla XXX Kong if they did one of those kind of like adult versions of it, but that's not going to happen, I don't think. Would that be Godzilla X Dong? Anyhow, we're going to be going back to 1954 and 1956, respectively, to look at Godzilla, Gojira versus, it's going to be Gojira X Godzilla. Two movies, one movie, and the Americanized version of the Japanese original, neither of which I have ever seen.
Ooh.
So I'm excited about that.
Wow.
Wait a second. Hold on. Petty asked, the Roadhouse? Wait, no. What?
Oh, Petty, I love you. I want to review the Roadhouse. How dumb it was.
I'll watch. I don't know if I can do Gyllenhaal taking over for Swayze. I don't.
Look, you know what you need to do? You need to do a Roadhouse, and then what is it? Roadhouse 89, and then Roadhouse 2024, and compare. And
oh my gosh,
Roadhouse
another anniversary.
Roadhouse.
Yeah. You're very persuasive. Anyway, that was horrible.
Reviewing makes us feel good. Remember? Yeah.
And John Griffin chimes in, special guest Bill Goodmanson. If I could get Bill on, I don't know. I'm kind of afraid to ask him because I think he might just quote Paul Reiser at me. But, you know, it's a good idea. This is an in-joke for the three people in the audience who are going to get it. But anyway, I love the thought, John. All right. I'm seriously going to let everybody get out of here. Thanks so much for hanging out and talking / watching us talk about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. I don't recommend it. I do recommend go watch Late Night with the Devil. Find a theater where it's showing and watch that. Mm-hmm. That is great horror. It is great human drama. And it's even kind of funny in places. And get yourself some gas station Ghostbusters swag, as Katie did. She's a true believer. I love the terror dog. Oh, my gosh. I got to get some of that.
Oh, man. I should have brought in my proton gun.
I don't know if you can show that on a live stream.
Going back again. I'm not even messing with it, guys. I'm freaking out. I'm freaking out that it's doing that.
Do we need to stay on here so that nothing can attack you in your apartment, Katie? I'll do it. We'll turn this into a 12-hour live stream.
I'm thinking it's okay, but seriously, I'm not touching anything and it's doing that. That means like some ghosts are listening.
Or you need to change the battery. Anyway, good night, everybody. Thank you. Take care. And go catch some ghosts. I don't know how to end this thing, so I'm just going to press end stream.